you very much. Let the record show that we're reconvening at 9:32 a.m. Okay. Let the record reflect that the board members have been furnished with copies of the complaint and notice of hearing and all pleadings of record. Will the parties please identify themselves, beginning with the state?
Good morning, Mona Baskin, Assistant Attorney General, representing the state of Arizona in this matter.
Steve Anderson.
Thank you. Okay. Okay, Dr. Anderson, please be advised you have the right to be represented by an attorney. However, in an administrative proceeding such as this, the law does not provide for the appointment of counsel. By proceeding without an attorney, you are waiving your right to such representation at this hearing. You may seek legal counsel at any subsequent proceedings, such as an appeal. This hearing is the party's opportunity to present testimony and evidence in support of their cases. If you appeal the board's decision, the record that the parties make at this hearing will be the record that a reviewing court will consider in determining whether to affirm the board's decision. You understand these rights as I have read them to you?
Yes.
This is an administrative hearing. A hearing of this nature differs from other court proceedings because the board may conduct the hearing in an informal manner. The technical rules of evidence do not apply. Reliable hearsay evidence is admissible. The board will, however, entertain objections concerning irrelevant, repetitious, or otherwise inadmissible evidence. The board will give evidence and testimony that it receives different weight depending on its relevance, credibility, force, and other factors. Simply because the board admits evidence does not mean that it gives that evidence any weight in reaching its final decision. In a disciplinary proceeding, the state bears the burden of proof and shall present its case first. Then Dr. Anderson will be given the opportunity to present his case. The state may then call rebuttal witnesses, if any, before the matter concludes. Each party will be allowed to present evidence, cross-examine opposing witnesses, and make a closing argument. Board members also may ask questions of the witnesses or parties during the hearing. After the board hears all the evidence and arguments that the parties have presented, the board will close the evidentiary portion of the hearing, deliberate, and make a decision. Does the state wish to make an opening statement, which I will remind her as a summary?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Pasagas, members of the board, Dr. Anderson, on behalf of the state of Arizona. This case stems from the complaints that were received by the board from 1-800 contacts against over 500 optometrists in the state of Arizona. Dr. Anderson is one of those complainants. In that case, the board received the complaint, processed the complaint, and we are here today for three specific reasons. Number one, the first reason is that Dr. Anderson failed to cooperate with the board by providing an answer to the board's complaint. That is the first reason, and that those allegations are contained within the complaint notice of hearing. But what happened in this case, you're going to hear from your executive director, Margaret Whalen, and she's going to tell you how she received the complaints, how she processed them, how she worked with counsel for 1-800 contact lenses, how she subsequently received all the patient names that were associated with the original complaints that were obtained by the board, how she sent those out to the licensees, how the licensees responded. Specifically in this case, you're going to hear from Ms. Whalen, and she's going to tell you that she advised Dr. Anderson of the complaints against his license. She sent him a formal letter. She asked him to respond. She advised him of his duty under ARS 2217-44C to file a response. Dr. Anderson did not file a response to the board's request at that time, really at any time throughout the proceedings. But what he did do is he submitted a packet of patient records. Now, what Ms. Whalen initially provided to Dr. Anderson was a list of all the patients that there were complaints against. She had the dates, and she had the actual patient names, the dates associated with the request by 1-800 contacts. Ms. Whalen, after she submitted the first request from Dr. Anderson, just received a packet. She's going to tell you that the only reason why she knew that that packet was from Dr. Anderson was because his name was on the medical record. There was no letter, there was no response, there was no correspondence associated with those records. She will also tell you that those records were partial, they were incomplete. You will see within the state's exhibits, once they are entered in evidence, is that there's state's exhibit A. There are patients that Dr. Anderson did not provide medical records for. There is going to be state's exhibit B, which contains the records that Dr. Anderson did provide the board with. And upon your review of those, you will determine that those records are incomplete. So Ms. Whalen obtained these records. She waited. She provided Dr. Anderson with additional time. She sent him another friendly email request. Dr. Anderson, are you going to respond to the board? She did not receive a response from Dr. Anderson. She presented the case to the board for initial review. She advised Dr. Anderson of the initial review. She told him that his presence was not required. But again, another opportunity to respond to the request of the board. Dr. Anderson did not respond. Then the matter was voted to an informal interview. Again, Dr. Anderson was advised at his address of record with the board that there was going to be an informal interview. There was no written response. He was advised that the informal interview was continued. There was no written response. Now, let me say at this point, he was not required to attend the informal interview. He was not required under the law to do that. But that what is relevant about that is that it is another opportunity for Dr. Anderson to respond to the complaint, which he did not do that. The board moved the matter to formal hearing, citing concerns with no response or no documentation regarding the complaints, in addition to some substantive violations that I'm going to discuss in a moment. And at that point, the board issued the complaint notice of hearing on September 6th of 2019, and at that point, Dr. Anderson did file a response to the board. That's the first time that the board heard from Dr. Anderson in this case. Now, there's two other portions of this case. The one portion is that optometrists in the state of Arizona are required to comply with the Fairness to Contact Lens Act, and that's something that the board is all familiar with. In this case, the complaint alleges that they submitted requests to Dr. Anderson for the patients involved, requested not a verification of the prescription, but the actual prescription itself. And under your board statute, which incorporates by reference the Fairness to Contact Lens Act, an optometrist is required to respond to those. In the records that we received, that the board received from Dr. Anderson, there's not one response. And you will hear that from Ms. Whalen. You will also hear that from the expert in this case, and you will have the documentary evidence before you for you to make that own determination. And the second area that we have of concern is one that the board included in the complaint notice of hearing, and it's failure to comply with record keeping. The records in this case fall below the standard of care of what the minimum standards are for record keeping in the state of Arizona. You will hear from an expert witness in this case, Dr. Christina Sorensen. She took she reviewed the records. She looked at the records solely for compliance with the record keeping requirements within your rules, and she has issued a report for you to consider, and she will also be here to testify this morning. So at the conclusion of the hearing, on behalf of the state of Arizona, the state will request that the board impose disciplinary action against Dr. Anderson for these separate areas of unprofessional conduct. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Anderson, would you wish to make an opening statement?
First of all, I know he's such a bad guy, but I didn't respond to the 1-800 contact lens inquiry in writing for two reasons. One, I figured you guys had 500 other responses, and I was going to say the same thing. Number two, I didn't realize it was absolutely required. Number three, my name's Anderson, and out of the hundreds of supposed complaints from 1-800, a large percentage of the patients I'd never seen. You know, and everybody knows the practices of 1-800 contacts. They would call you up, ask if this is your patient, you know, press 1 or 2 or 3. You press a button on their response, and it doesn't work. It doesn't, you know, they fax you or call you at 2 in the morning. You know, there's a myriad of dishonest practices that they were, you know, engaged in. As far as the hearings that I didn't show up for, I thought were all voluntary. And so, and as far as record keeping, it'll be interesting to see what's in there. I mean, I had construction done in my office, and my contractor dumped over my 12,000 files, and then he threw them all in three large trash cans. So my files are a little bit messed up. He subsequently scanned them all, and there's a small percentage of the files that are, you know, still have a wrong data in the file that every once in a while I come across. So bad. But we need to we've gone to electronic medical records keeping, you know, probably a decade ago. And I think things are pretty clean. So just want you guys to know that I wasn't doing anything malicious. I thought you guys didn't need another person telling you how bad 1-800 was. I mean, it's pretty obvious to everybody who knows anything about it. And because I'm trying to avoid you guys, and just let them do their thing. So, apologize for that, but that's basically it in a nutshell. Whatever you deem I did wrong, I probably did, and I'll suffer the consequences, I guess. But it was no malicious intent from my point of view. I just thought you guys were taking care of it, and everybody knows it was bullshit, so I was of that same opinion, so I gave it less attention than I should have, obviously, because I'm sitting here.
Okay, thank you very much. Would the state please call its first witness?
Yes, thank you. Dr. Kasaga, the state would call Margaret Whalen.
And the court reporter needs to swear you in.
Yes. Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give at this time and place will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
The state may proceed with its witness.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Whalen, can you please state your name for the record?
Margaret Whalen.
Okay, and where are you employed?
With the state of Arizona, the State Board of Optometry.
And what is your position?
Executive Director.
And how long have you been in that position?
16 years.
Okay. And can you please summarize your educational background?
Yes. I have a Bachelor of Arts from Creighton University, and I have a Master of Public Administration from Arizona State University.
Okay. And how many licensees does the board regulate here in Arizona, approximately?
Just about 1,200.
Okay. All right. And how many employees does the board have?
2.
Okay. And pursuant to the board statute, ARS 3217-02D, how often does the board required to hold meetings?
The board is mandated to meet at least 6 times per year.
Okay. All right. And is it fair to say that the Board of Optometry is a small board within the state of Arizona?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank you. Did you receive complaints from any kind of contacts in March of 2016 regarding optometrists here in the state of Arizona?
Yes.
Okay. And can you describe what you received?
Yes. I received 9 boxes of paper. They were all complaints contained in there with no narrative, just boxes of complaints.
Okay. All right. And approximately how many complaints did you receive?
I believe there was 3,261 complaints.
All right. And against how many optometrists did the state of Arizona?
525.
Okay. All right. I'd like you to take a look at State's Exhibit C1. And I'm going to go ahead and I'm providing a copy of those exhibits. And the board, has copies of State's Exhibit C, and that would be 1-11, and also State's Exhibit A1A and B. believe we're giving those to you electronically.
Oh.
Rather than in paper form.
So what are we looking at?
State Exhibit C, one. There should not be anything related to the dietary here.
There isn't, just the exhibit.
Okay. All right, Ms. Whalen, if you would like to turn your attention to State Exhibit 1, that would be at base 908 through 921. Can you please identify what this document is?
What page is on?
It's the beginning of it. There's a little base stamp, which is like a number that we use in the law to identify exhibits. It's at the very bottom.
This is the original complaint that came in from 1-800 Contacts, a portion of Dr. Anderson's.
And Ms. Whalen, if you want to take a look at the first complaint that's within State's Exhibit C1, is this the original, is this representative of the original complaint that you received from 1-800 Contacts?
Yes.
Okay. And on page 4 of it, does it identify, page 4, line 5, does it identify an RX capture ID number that 1-800 has associated with their request from the doctor in that case for the for the contact lens prescription?
Yes.
Okay. And is this, throughout this whole document, is there any mention of a patient name?
No.
Okay. And then turning to page 7, is this the letter, is this the redacted portion of the letter that 1-800 sent to Dr. Anderson?
It's actually a redacted prescription.
Right. Mm-hmm. And does it have the patient name and address redacted?
It does, yes.
Okay. All right. And the second complaint within State's Exhibit C1, is this of a similar nature but has a separate RFID number?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And then associated with the complaints that were received from 1-800, turning to, that would be base 922, did you also receive the affidavit from Brandon Korenberg from 1-800?
Yes.
Okay. And does that explain the process that 1-800 went through to identify the patient with the RX ID number, the care that they took in sending out their electronic information, requesting
yes.
this?
Yes.
Okay. Now, the first two complaints that are in State Exhibit 1, are those which you originally received from 1-800 Contacts?
The first two, yes.
Right. Okay. And when you received those, did you note that there was any problem at that point?
Yes, I did.
And what problem did you note?
In order for the board to properly notice the doctor, we would require a patient name or other identifying information. Otherwise, there would be no way for the doctor to respond to the complaint.
Okay. All right. In the past, in all your 17 years of being the executive director of the optometry board, have you received complaints where there's no patient name?
Very rarely.
Okay. And in instances when you didn't, what would you follow up and try to get a patient name?
Yes.
And in fact, is that what you did in this case? Did you follow up with 1-800 to try to get patient names so that the doctors could respond fully?
Yes, I did.
Okay. All right. At this time, the statement is State Exhibit 1, C1 in evidence.
Do we have to formally accept that? Or we just...
Yes.
We don't... disapprove, does it just go in, or do you say?
No, you would need to accept it, but before you do, you, if you could ask Dr. Anderson if he has any objections to the admission of the state's exhibit.
I can do that. Dr. Anderson, do you have any objections to the state adding this exhibit?
Any objections to the statement?
To the state adding this exhibit?
No, and I won't have any objections to anything else.
Dr. Anderson, then would you just would you want to stipulate to the admission of the state exhibits at this point, or do you, or we can go through one by one and I can lay foundation so you can understand what they are. But could we do that?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. So, Ms. Whalen, did you subsequently request the patient name from the 800?
Yes.
All right. And turning to state exhibit C2, is this a letter that you sent to counsel for 1-800 contacts requesting the patient name?
Yes.
Okay. And what is the date of this letter?
March 15, 2016.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And is this a fair representation of the doc of the letter that you submitted to 1-800?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. The state moves state exhibit C2 in evidence.
Is that okay with you?
I will object to nothing. Go ahead and put everything in.
Okay. All right, thank you. All right, Ms. Whalen, after you made the request from 1-800, did you subsequently get a response from 1-800 contact?
Yes, I did.
All right, and turning to State Exhibit C3, is this the letter that you received from the Rose Law Group regarding their response to your request for patient name?
Yes.
All right, and this is a three-page letter. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And did 1-800 agree to provide the board with patient names in this letter?
No.
Okay. All right. And what was their position? The letter speaks for itself, but could you just basically summarize?
Sure. They felt that the information that they provided was appropriate and that the information we requested would not be provided. They're saying that corresponding patient names identified in the complaints is improper and is confidential. And because we, as the state, do public records, they wouldn't provide that.
Okay. All right, thank you. The state would move state exhibit C3 in evidence.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. All right, Ms. Whalen, now, can you please explain what processes the board employs to protect the identity of patients when they receive a report?
Yes. So any documents that they go out to the public, we redact. Or when we're in board meetings, we only refer to patients by their initials.
Okay. And, in fact, do you have a confidentiality statute that requires that patient medical records cannot be disclosed?
Yes.
All right, thank you. Now, did you work with 1-800 counsel and ultimately obtain the records?
Yes, I did.
All right, thank you. Turning to State Exhibit 4, is this the email correspondence between the board and 1-800 contact regarding release of those patient names?
Yes.
Okay. And is the, turning to the first page within State Exhibit 4, I believe that page 948, does this email, what date was did you receive this?
I'm sorry, what was your question?
What is the date of the email that you received?
August 29th, 2016.
Okay, and is this again from Rose Law Group?
Yes it is, excuse me, yes.
Okay,
yes.
And is it from Attorney Logan Talia?
Yes.
Okay, and what is the substance of this email?
This is an email following up advising the board that they would indeed give patient names.
Okay. All right. And did they offer to assist to provide those to the board in electronic format?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So at this point, they were going forward and providing the information to the board and assisting the board in obtaining that information electronically?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. The state moves state exhibit 4 in evidence.
Okay.
Thank you. Now, Ms. Whalen, before you received the medical records, in this case, I mean the patient names that would allow the doctors to disclose the medical records and respond to the complaints, did you send out the complaints to some of the optometrists in this case?
Yes.
Okay. And were there problems at that point?
Well, without the information, I think the doctors had a challenge responding to the complaints, so the complaints were dismissed for no findings because there wasn't any record.
But once you did have the records, then the doctors were able to provide those and provide substantive answers?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Now, in this case, did you compile all the patient names and the complaints that were related to Dr. Anderson in this case?
Yes.
All right, and then turning to State's Exhibit 5, is this a copy of the letter that you sent to Dr. Anderson with the cashier ID number, the request date from 1-800, and the patient's first and last name within what looks like an Excel spreadsheet form?
Yes.
Okay. All right, and what is the date of this letter that you sent?
June 21st, 2017.
And approximately how many patients were included in this?
74 total.
Okay. All right. And if you would turn to the top of the page, right below the date, did you send that to Dr. Anderson's address of record to the board?
Yes.
Okay. Is that at Arcadia Eye Care?
Yes.
All right. Now, turning to page 3 of the letter, right below your Excel spreadsheet chart, what did you advise Dr. Anderson in bold?
Pursuant to ARS 32-1744B, please submit a written response to this complaint and the allegations contained therein no later than 20 days after receipt of this letter.
Okay, and then do you underline and bold the no later than 20 days?
Yes.
Okay, and in the next paragraph, can you please read that into the record?
In addition, pursuant to ARS 32-1747, please send copies of all documents, including patient records, pertaining to the above-named patient, if applicable. Records must be submitted in whole. Please do not omit documentation or alter records.
And then did you advise him what the next step would be in the investigative process in the third paragraph on the final page of your letter?
Yes.
And could you please read that into the record?
You will be notified when the board has completed its preliminary review of this matter and the board meeting date at which it will be reviewed.
So at this time, you made your formal request for a response to the allegation, and you requested documents?
Yes.
Okay. The state at this time moves State's Exhibit 5 in evidence.
Okay.
Now, Ms. Whalen, did Dr. Anderson provide you the response to the complaint pursuant to ARS 32-1744B?
No.
Okay. Did he provide you with records subsequent to this?
Eventually, but I believe not at that time.
Okay. All right. Eventually, what did he submit to you in record format? Or did you receive, let me ask that as a better question, did you receive patient records from Dr. Anderson?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And was that sent in a package form?
It was sent in a large envelope.
Okay. And was there any type of letter, any type of response, any type of correspondence from Dr. Anderson?
No.
Okay. How did you even know that package was from Dr. Anderson?
After reviewing the records contained in the envelope, I saw Dr. Anderson's name on the electronic.
All right. And then after you obtained those records, did you review and organize them?
Yes.
Okay. And did you review and organize them in comparison to the complaint, the patient names that was provided by 1-800-CONTACT?
Yes.
Okay. And when you went ahead and reviewed them, were there a portion of those documents that did not have any, when you compared them to the patient names that 1-800 requested, were there a portion of the complaint where Dr. Anderson did not provide any records?
Correct. Some of the patient names listed had records. Some were not there.
Some were not.
That's because they
okay.
said you...
Objection.
What am I going to respond to that?
Well, I mean, you're in.
When the state is finished presenting.
Okay.
Right. So, Ms. Whalen, within State's Exhibit A, We have patients without a medical record, and there were these, if you want to take a look at the patients contained in SAFE Exhibit A. And it does have the patient's initials on those. But those are the patients that were without a medical record. Are those the records that you divided up and made a determination that there were no medical records provided by Dr. Anderson?
Yes.
Okay. Now, would this have been an opportunity for him to provide an explanation of why there were not any associated medical records?
Yes.
Okay. But Dr. Anderson did not provide any such explanation, did he?
Correct.
Okay. All right. The state would move State's Exhibit A into evidence. Those would basically be the complaints from 1-800 with the associated names without any medical records received from Dr. Anderson by the court. Thank you. Ms. Whalen, turning to State's Exhibit B, in your review of the documents received from Dr. Anderson, did you sort out and organize the patient records that corresponded to the complaints from 1-800 contacts?
Yes.
Okay, and are those the patient records that were contained in the state's exhibit?
Yes.
Okay, and are those medical records from your review complete or are they partial?
They appear to be partial.
Now, when you reviewed those, were there any responses that Dr. Anderson made to 1-800 contacts for a request for contact lens prescriptions within the state's exhibit?
I did not see any notation of that.
All right. The state would move State's Exhibit B in evidence.
Okay. I'd like to remind the board that if you have any objections to anything being brought into evidence, you can let me know.
We're having trouble just finding it.
All right, thank you. At that time, once you reviewed all the documentation, Ms. Whalen, what was your next course? What did you do next?
I reached out to Dr. Anderson to again ask for a narrative of the records that he sent and also to respond to the original complaint.
Okay, so you gave him a second chance at that time to respond. Turning to State's Exhibit 6, is this the email correspondence that you had with Dr. Anderson?
Yes.
Okay, and what is the date of your email correspondence?
November 7th, 2017.
And does it indicate the complaint investigative report number on the top of it?
Yes.
Okay. And did you send it to his address of record with the board?
His email address of record, yes.
Okay. All right. And what did you basically tell him in this email correspondence?
I basically said that I still hadn't received a narrative for the above-named complaint since the complaint number was listed. And I have the records that he sent, but there wasn't any type of explanation attached to the record.
All right. And did you receive any response from Dr. Anderson from that second request for a response from him?
No.
Statement State's Exhibit 6 in evidence.
Okay.
All right. Did you ultimately schedule this for an initial review by the board?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And did you advise Dr. Anderson that his case would be considered at that initial review?
Yes.
Okay. The state has a subsequent State Exhibit C-12 that is not electronic, but I can go ahead and provide it to the board. Ms. Whalen, would you want to? I provided it to Dr. Anderson, and I have 5 copies. And do you have a copy of it for yourself? You do? Okay. All right. Thank you. And may the record reflect that Ms. Whalen is providing the board with State's Exhibit C-12, and it is a September 22nd, 2017 letter. Whalen. Turning to SAFE Exhibit C-12, is this the letter that you sent to to Dr. Anderson advising him of the initial review of the complaint?
Yes.
Okay. All right. And again, was this another opportunity for Dr. Anderson to respond to the board?
Yes.
Okay. Did Dr. Anderson respond?
No.
Okay. All right. And did you advise him that his attendance is encouraged but not required?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. The statement moves State Exhibit C-12 in evidence. Dr. Kasani?
Okay.
Thank you. Now, the board's review of the complaint at that board meeting, what decision did they take in the matter?
The board moved it to informal interview.
And tell me, can you explain the process that the board does when they go ahead and review cases?
Yes. So when the complaint comes in, a copy of it is sent to a licensee. The licensee has 20 days to respond to the board. Once the response is received by the licensee, it goes on the next board meeting. The board at that time does its initial review and determines if there's any violation of statutes or rules at that time. If none, they can dismiss it. If there's possible violation, they can issue a non-disciplinary letter of concern. If they have some concern about the records or anything else submitted as part of the complaint, they can move it to informal interview to invite the doctor to appear for possible disciplinary action at that time.
All right. And did you follow that procedure in this case as far as notice and procedural?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Now, turning to State Exhibit 7, are these the final minutes from the December 8, 2017 Board of Optometry meeting?
Yes.
Okay. All right, I'd like to draw your attention to page 3 of 10. Is this when the board considered the complaint against Dr. Anderson's license?
Yes.
Okay. And can you just, again, summarize what happened in this case as far as what this is the board meeting that the board took what action?
Yes. Excuse me. Dr. Anderson failed to release a copy of a prescription when requested. There was 74 complaints for 34 patients. Dr. Anderson submitted no response or narrative, only incomplete medical records.
Okay. All right. So did the board move it to an informal interview at that time?
Yes, they did.
Okay. And were there concerns about legal concerns about not responding to the complaint, record keeping in this case?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. The state would move State Exhibit 7 in evidence.
Permitted.
Okay. Now, prior to the informal interview, are you required to notify the doctor of the allegation against his license, the potential allegations of unprofessional conduct, and the date and time of the informal interview?
Yes, at least 30 days prior.
Okay. And then turning to State Exhibit 8, is this the notification that you provided to Dr. Anderson regarding the informal interview?
Yes.
Okay. And what is the date of the letter?
January 22nd, 2018.
Okay. And what is the date of the informal interview?
It was scheduled for March 9th, 2018.
And does it contain factual allegations and also allegations of unprofessional conduct?
Yes.
And on the final page of the letter, Ms. Whalen, that would be 505, do you advise Dr. Anderson of his options?
Yes.
Okay. All right, and do you, again, request that he confirm in writing that he's going to attend the informal interview?
Yes, within 10 days from the date of the letter.
Okay, and that is totally optional. He's not required to attend.
Correct.
Okay, all right. The state would move State Exhibit 8 in evidence.
Okay.
Did you receive any response from Dr. Anderson from this?
No.
Yes. Did he call you?
No.
Did he send you any documentation?
No.
All right. When was the case actually heard? When was it informal, in your view, actually heard?
It was heard in April of 2018.
Instead of heard, I apologize. The better question is scheduled.
It was rescheduled to April due to lack of a quorum in March.
Okay, so it was initially scheduled for March,
mm-hmm.
and then what happened?
The board ended up not having a quorum in March, so we moved it back 1 month to April.
Okay. And did you advise Dr. Anderson in writing at his address of record of this change in date?
Yes.
All right. And did you hear from Dr. Anderson after you advised him of the change in date?
No.
Okay. Right. Turning to State's Exhibit 9, are these the minutes from the board meeting?
Yes, from the April 20th, 2018 meeting.
Okay. And on page 3 of 10, is this the portion of the minutes that deal with Dr. Anderson and the informal interview that was scheduled?
Yes.
Okay. And what does it state?
Dr. Anderson was formally invited to but did not appear for the informal interview. The board remained in need of further information from Dr. Anderson regarding this case and moved the case to formal hearing for further action pursuant to ARS 32-1744-D.
Okay. All right. Thank you. The state would move State's Exhibit 9. That would be the final minutes of the April 20th, 2018 board meeting in evidence. Okay. Thank you. Now, Ms. Whalen, after that time, did you at all hear from Dr. Anderson, either in writing or by letters, by email, or by a phone call?
Before the formal hearing notice?
Yes, before the formal hearing
no.
notice. Okay. All right. Now, in preparation for the formal hearing, and based on the board's concern regarding the adequacy of the patient records, did you contact an expert in this case?
Yes, I did.
Okay, and who did you contact?
Christina Sorensen, optometrist.
Okay, and why did you contact Dr. Sorensen?
Dr. Sorensen was used on a previous case in front of the board for record keeping, and she was known to be an excellent expert and advisor on record.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And did Dr. Sorensen agree to review the records and serve as an expert in this case?
Yes, she did.
Okay. And did she provide you with a copy of her curriculum vitae and report in this case?
Yes.
Okay. And is her curriculum vitae contained in Exhibit 10?
Yes.
Okay. And is her final report regarding the records review for record keeping and compliance with the board's rules and statute contained in State Exhibit 11?
I think I'm missing that.
Exhibit 11?
I do not have a copy of it. It may be in your copy. I just don't have.
Okay. Have you?
I have seen the report.
Okay. And you have it in your records?
Yes, and I have reviewed it as well.
All right. Thank you.
Members of the board, do you
have a comment? I'm looking right now because it's 11. It's
do you want to be 11 would be.
11 should. 11 should be Dr. Sorensen's report. If for some reason that was inadvertently excluded from your flash drive, we will need to take a
look. No, I got it. It's just on page 986.
Okay, all right. I know it's a large file.
No, it's there. I mean,
There's a CV at 986. That's the
999.
The board is or the report.
Okay.
There is. So have you asked to put this into?
Dr. Kasagas, now at this time, I'll have Dr. Sorensen lay the proper foundation for her CV and also for her report. Ms. Whalen, I do have one question for you. After the complaint notice of hearing was issued in this case, did you receive a response from Dr. Anderson?
Yes.
Okay, and that was the first written response that you had?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. The state has no further questions. Ms. Whalen, and the state believes that state exhibit A and B and state exhibit C 1 through 9 and 12 have been admitted in evidence.
Dr. Anderson, do you have a cross-examination for the witness? Any questions you'd like to ask?
Just a couple comments. Section 6, I remember seeing two of these emails, and I noticed that the email address is one that I don't use. So somewhere along the lines, we had the right and the wrong address. They're very similar. So that's part of the reason I didn't respond, because I didn't see some of this stuff.
And I'm sorry to interrupt, Dr. Anderson. Mr. President, members of the board, this is an opportunity for Dr. Anderson to ask any questions of the executive director. You'll have every opportunity when it's time to present your defense to address any issues that came up during the state's presentation of their case. But if you have any questions for Margaret right now, this would be the time, based upon the state's examination. Thank you.
I guess I would go here. If you called up your doctor and asked him to send all your medical records, your name's Margaret Whalen, would they send them to you?
I would hope so.
They wouldn't, because they would ask you.
Objection, that's not the question. Dr. Anderson, you need to ask him as well on questions outside the fire
department.
Do you realize they wouldn't? The reason they wouldn't is because you
objection,
have to.
Dr. Anderson, you need to ask.
That was the question. Do you realize they wouldn't? Then they would not.
Ask her a question, not
okay, then ask the question. Do you realize they would not? Had you given them just your name?
No.
Well, they would not. And the reason is because you didn't give them
objection, any other. Objection, Dr. Anderson. That's I can't even testify.
Okay, then I'll ask her a question. Are you aware that if you did not give them other information other than your name, they would never give you any medical records?
I am aware of that.
And for some reason, we were not afforded the same courtesy as the date of birth or an address, date of service. You know, I Googled one of my patients' names the other day, and it was 237 first and last names in Maricopa County. So part of the reason we can't is part of the give proper medical records, because we don't have enough data to actually see if the patient is ours. If the patient is ours, if it's one of multiple people. So, I mean, there's an issue with that. So that wasn't done very well. So that's my only comment.
Objection. Again, this is not a time for a narrative. It's time for questions for Ms. Whalen based on her testimony.
Are you aware that I had two email addresses on your file because you send me emails that I get and apparently send me emails that I don't get? They're very similar. Letter I four times, Dave, one at MSN, which I do not use, and one at Yahoo, which I do use.
Initially, I was not aware, and then I became aware that you had two of them because I wasn't hearing back from you.
Okay.
And so that's why I do send them to both, because I didn't know which one you used regularly.
Okay. Yes, so you're not aware that some of the stuff I didn't receive, so. But, I mean, the gist of your complaint is valid. The meetings that I wasn't required to come to, I didn't come to. And I had no, are you aware that I did not know that I was required to come to a meeting and did not show up? So, Anyway.
Any other questions?
No, I just wanted to make those two points, that I had two email addresses and that nobody should be held to give patient records when we don't have the proper data, proper information to find out if it's even a patient. So.
Redirect.
Yes, thank you. Ms. Whalen, take a look at State's Exhibit 5, if I could draw your attention to that again. That's your official June 21st, 2017 letter to Dr. Anderson.
Yes.
Okay. And now, Ms. Whalen, again, was this sent to Dr. Anderson at our Arcadia Eye Care as the address of record with the board?
Yes, the mailing address of record.
Okay. And in this, again, you provided him with Rx capture ID numbers, the request date from 1-800, and the patient's first and last name. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And in fact, Dr. Anderson did provide the board with a portion of the records based on this initial request from the board. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. But he did not respond to you in narrative form to the complaint that matter, did he?
Correct.
All right. Now, turning to State's Exhibit 6, that's already been admitted in evidence, and that's the your email to him of November 7th of 2017 at 12:33 p.m. Is it fair to say that this second correspondence was a courtesy email to him to give him the opportunity to respond to the board's complaint?
It was.
Okay. Yes. And whose responsibility is it to update and maintain correct email addresses and their address of record with the board?
The licensees.
Okay, so it would be up to Dr. Anderson to have corresponded to tell you what his current email address was. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. And did anything come from your recollection? Did you receive any bounce back emails saying that it was undeliverable to either of the email addresses that you sent it to?
No.
All right, thank you.
Other question?
Dr. Anderson, I'm not finished. Thank you.
I'm sorry, I wasn't.
Thank you. Now, Ms. Whalen, in your other correspondence to Dr. Anderson, such as what's contained in State's Exhibit C-12, that was again sent to his address of record with the board at ARC. Arcadia Eye Care. Is that correct?
Yes, his mailing address of record.
Okay. And again, the only time that we received an email back from him was in response to the complaint. Is that correct?
To the formal hearing.
Right, to the complaint notice of hearing.
Yes, complaint notice of hearing.
Okay. Give me a moment. And that was the response that Dr. Anderson submitted on September 21st of 2019. Did you receive that by email or did you receive that by regular mail?
Email.
Okay. All right. And do you have the email address that I was sent? I have the actual response.
What exhibit number was that?
It's not an exhibit because it's actually a pleading in the case. And his response.
At that time, I would have sent it to both email addresses,
okay.
Not knowing which one was correct.
Okay, but you did receive the email response to that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, thank you. I have no further questions on this one.
Mr. Harris, I have a direct examination, cross-examination, redirect examination. Now, Dr. Anderson wants to ask a question. Can he cross-examine after a redirect?
It's at your discretion.
What's my next question? Go ahead, ask a question.
I was waiting. Under Exhibit 6, the email that you sent me, it's to the, it looks like it was sent to the email that I don't use at msn.com twice. It looks like it says 24idavidmsn.com and then 4idavidmsn.com again. So that one is and the one following. So I think is it reasonable to assume that I didn't get some of these emails?
Yes, it is reasonable to assume that.
Any other questions?
Ms.
can?
Okay. Yes, I do.
You're direct.
No, thank you. Ms. Whalen, whose responsibility was it to maintain address of record both electronically and his address of record before?
It's the licensee's responsibility.
Well, thank you.
Okay. This is actually timed after direct and cross-examination.
I'm sorry, do I have another question?
Do you have another question?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
So I don't remember in the last 10 years even changing my email
Objection.
Address with the board.
Objection. Dr. Anderson, can you please ask a question? Thank you.
Are you aware of any
email? Like Jeopardy, you answer the question.
I know. It's like Do you have any recollection that I changed my email address or updated in the last 10 years?
No.
Yeah, neither do I.
What I was going to say was, after the direct and cross-examination, we board members have an opportunity to ask the witness any questions that you would like. And I have a couple. One was in relation to the emails, and I was going to say that it is the is it not our responsibility as optometrists to get you the, I mean, whether we change it or not, somewhere you have to have the email address you have is the one you're sending it out to. We have no other reason to change them.
Correct.
Okay. And for the benefit of the many board members here who weren't around for a lot of the 1-800 complaints that we adjudicated, when people, when even board members got complaints from patients they didn't even have as patients, what did you do? What happened? I'm trying to ask a question.
Right. I understand your question. Most of those doctors would still respond stating that patients A, B, C, and D, as they listed them, were not their patients.
Okay. And if we received a, again, we as a doctor that got a complaint, I had four patients with that name,
mm-hmm.
What would you do?
I would reach out to 1-800-CONTACTS for further information, specifying that it was a very common name and if they could provide additional information, and it was provided in those cases.
Thanks. Any other questions? Does the state wish to call any additional witnesses?
Yes, at this time, the state would call Dr. Christina Sorensen.
And the court reporter will now swear you in.
And I'm sorry, I can have Dr. Sorensen sit over here.
Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give at this time and place will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Okay.
Good morning. Do I need to have her introduce herself, or do you have to?
I think you can either way, but I'm able to do that, Dr. Spock.
Okay, then you may proceed with your witness.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, Dr. Sorensen. Thank you for being here. Could you please state your name for the record?
Dr. Christina Sorensen.
And what is your occupation?
I'm a doctor of optometry.
And how did you get involved in this case?
I was contacted by Executive Director Margaret Whalen via email approximately 2 weeks ago, at which time I was attending the Academy meeting in Orlando, Florida. She asked me if I would be interested or available to perform a medical records review. I said I would not be available until the following Monday, at which time she forwarded me those records requesting a report to be delivered to her by Friday, which I did complete, sent her the report, and reviewed the records by Thursday afternoon.
Okay.
So that was the turnaround and the invitation.
All right. Thank you very much. Now, have you served as an expert witness in previous cases?
I have.
Okay. And have they been before the board or in Superior Court? Or could you just briefly state in what venue they were in?
For the most part, the type of work that I have done has been behind the scenes, where I would provide a report on medical records review. So previously for this board, I did provide medical records review over a very long period of time, where I submitted monthly reports to them over a period of approximately 18 months.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you have, in other cases, in other civil litigation cases, served as an expert for, based on records and other standard of care in the optometry profession.
That is correct statement. Yes.
Okay, all right, thank you. Now, turning to your curriculum vitae, which is contained in SAFE's Exhibit C11, can you briefly describe your, sorry, it's 10, I apologize. Can you please briefly describe your, this is quite a few pages long, so I would just want to focus on just generally your education as far as graduating from school and
my doctorate education?
Yes.
Yeah, I attended the University of Missouri, St. Louis, where I was granted the Doctor of Optometry degree. From there, I went on to the Kansas City VA Medical Center, where I completed a residency in hospital-based optometry and visual rehabilitation services.
Okay, so that additional information, education that you went through in those cases, that was in addition to your optometry degree.
That was in addition to the doctorate, yes, that's
correct. All right, can you briefly describe your professional career?
I'm old.
Okay. Maybe just highlight it, and then maybe we could get a stipulation from Dr. Anderson that you are an expert.
I'll stipulate that down.
Okay.
You want to go through it?
Okay. All right. Thank you. Dr. Posadas, would the board accept the stipulation from Dr. Anderson that Dr. Christina Sorensen meets the qualifications through her education, training, and experience as an expert in this case?
Yes, we do.
All right, thank you. Now, turning to your report that's within SAFE Exhibit 11, Dr. Sorensen, could you please describe how many medical records that you reviewed in this case?
I received over 800 pages of information from Ms. Whalen via email, and out of that, I reviewed 72 distinct encounters regarding this. That represented 31 separate patients. There were several patients where there were multiple encounters. I did review each encounter separately based on the rule R421305 requirements.
Okay. All right. And when you went ahead and got those records, when you received those records from Ms. Whalen, you took a random sampling of those.
I went through every one of them. Because I wasn't really sure the range of dates, and I wasn't sure of the patient type or age, et cetera. I did not want to be prejudicial, so I went through all of them.
Okay. All right. And can you state whether or not you know Dr. Anderson? Have you ever met him?
I have not, to my knowledge.
Okay. All right. So in this case, all that you did was take a look at the patient records and determine whether or not they met the minimum standards.
That is a correct statement.
All right. Now, turning to your conclusions in this case, I just want to, if you could give the board a summary of what your evaluation was in this case, like the end result, and then we'll get into each specific.
Well, the end result was that there was a 100% failure in documentation in compliance with Rule 421305.
Okay. All right. And if we could go ahead and turning to the first page, and you have this broken down into, it appears to me to be Excel spreadsheets. Under, as far as you have the patient name, you have an initial, and you have a date of service, and can you explain under the date of service what your annotations mean in this case?
Sure. The date of service is the third line down from the top. X meaning that there was a date of service noted, and then because there were oftentimes multiple instances under the same patient identifier, I put down the actual date that the examination was performed upon.
And Dr. Sorensen, why is the date of service, this seems like an obvious question, but why is it significant in a doctor's medical records?
Well, As might have been highlighted earlier with an earlier complaint that Dr. Lamb presented, it could be very remote from the incident that the patient brings something up, or it's oftentimes important as to the temporal incidence of, say, a secondary sequelae of a problem that occurred during the exam or an outcome measure.
All right, and it is also required under the record keeping rule.
Absolutely, okay. It is, yes.
All right, and then under ID of entrant, what does this mean?
What that is, it's required by the rule for the person entering the information into the electronic health record to be identified. So, for example, if you have technical staff that is entering entrance visual acuity or other information, that person needs to be identified, as does the doctor performing the exam.
All right. And as far as the signature of Dr. Anderson, and this is kind of jumping ahead, but it's related to this, did you find that in all the medical records? Did he sign the medical records?
Yes, all but one did not have a signature on it, but I'm not sure that was actually an exam, because okay. Everything is blank. But yes, it was an electronic signature at the end of each encounter.
All right, and as far as the next line within your spreadsheet, it says Health HS. Can you identify what that means?
Yes, that's it. That's the health history of the patient.
Okay. All right, and again, is that required under the record-keeping rule?
It is indeed.
Okay, and what did you find regarding that?
I found that that was sort of hit and miss as far as the health history. For the majority of the exams done, that health history appeared to be completed.
Okay. All right, thank you. And then under VA and BVA, can you please explain what that is?
Sure. The VA is the entrance visual acuity taken with the patient's habitual prescription or no prescription in place.
Okay.
And then the BVA is best visual acuity, which is an outcome measure of the refractive service that you performed for the patient.
All right, so this would occur after the doctor actually examines the patient's eyes and makes a determination of what their prescription is. I'm using layman's terms.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. All right, and then what did you find regarding that in Dr. Anderson's medical records?
In all but one case, no entrance visual acuity was ever recorded.
Okay.
Out of the 71 records or 72 records looked at.
But what about the BVA?
Those were recorded, yes.
Okay. All
yes.
Right. Okay, thank you. And then turning to the next line, OCE health exam. I guess that would be ocular health exam. Could you explain what your findings were about that?
Yeah, the ocular health exam is typically an optometric examination, including the slit lamp examination portion and then the fundus examination. And that was hit and miss as to whether it was done or not. I did not break these out in terms of percentages.
Okay.
Unfortunately,
all right, but you do have it by patient, and
yes.
No means no, and yes means yes that you found it within the medical record.
That is correct, yes.
Okay, and as far as the ocular health examination, that would be a standard of care. That would be required under the record-keeping rule.
That is correct.
Okay, and then why is that important to do that exam?
Well, first of all, it's required by the regulation or
okay.
the rule. But secondarily, you know, that's a huge service that we're providing to the patient. It isn't just about which is better, one or two.
Mm-hmm.
It's how is the visual system functioning in terms of its health and longevity. We are sworn to take care of these patients, so their health of the eye is just as important to how well they see.
All right, thank you. All right, and then turning to the next segment here, it says interocular pupils / ACC, and I believe that's extraocular muscle function. Can you explain?
You are correct.
Am I okay? Thank you. Can you explain why that's required?
Why it's required? Yes. The pupillary examination is actually a neurological evaluation that we perform with patients. It looks at the neural pathway. And it's exquisitely important in visual function and health of the eyes and the patient's functional status. The extraocular muscles is how the eyes move, either in concert or not, as the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
Also another very important piece of how a person functions on a visual basis.
Okay. And now, that is required under the record keeping rule that a doctor would note that in the patient's record. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. And then what did you find in reviewing Dr. Anderson's records in this case regarding those specific requirements under the intraocular and extraocular muscle function?
Mm-hmm. Well, when it was documented, every patient was exactly the same. They were all found to be orthophoric with pupil size of 3 and 4.
What concerns do you have about exactly the same documentations and assessments on maybe a wide range of patients with a wide age?
Yeah, well, that's exactly the point. The pupil does change its size over time. And the range of patients, I believe, was somewhere around 22 all the way up to 88. And an 88-year-old typically does not have a 3 or 4 millimeter pupil. It's usually around 2. So the question I had was that actually done and entered, or was it a default finding from the electronic health record?
Okay. All right, so you would have concerns as far as the accuracy of those entries into the medical record?
I would.
Okay. All right, and then the next category is, I believe, subjective MR. What is that?
That's manifest refraction. So that's the actual refractive data, like the glasses prescription or the contact lens prescription data.
Okay. All right. And why is that necessary? Why is that important?
Because to generate any type of glasses prescription, any type of to manufacture glasses or to fit contact lenses or purchase contact lenses, you need that information.
Okay. And would you agree with me that is a requirement of an eye examination in accordance with the standards of care in the profession that's done?
It is, but there is a caveat on this one. Remember, not every encounter that you have with a patient does demand a refractive status evaluation. At times you're doing an ocular health evaluation or a problem-focused evaluation. So there are times when not having that performed within the exam is perfectly acceptable.
All right, and based on your review of Dr. Anderson's records, what were your findings?
That the refractions were typically done,
mm-hmm.
And when they weren't done, I don't know how the end result was obtained.
Mm-hmm.
There are times where there's no notation of a refraction, but yet at the end there's a refractive diagnosis and a plan.
Would this indicate to you that maybe Dr. Anderson did not disclose all of his patient medical records?
That particular piece, it could be that those were contact lens patients and it was on a separate sheet,
mm-hmm.
but none of that was included within the record.
Okay.
So it's not it does not look to be a complete evaluation based on that to come up with a prescription or a contact lens prescription without that information.
Okay. All right. So you really don't know why it's not there?
I really don't know.
Okay. Fair enough. Thank you very much. All right. And then the next category is diagnosis. What were your findings regarding the diagnosis, diagnosis?
Yeah. On the diagnosis, typically the diagnosis was refractive. And when it was a refractive diagnosis, it was included. There were occasions where there was some allergic conjunctivitis, et cetera, and those were occasionally noted as well. But it is not 100% where the diagnosis is included in the record.
Okay. So, again, not 100% on those. What about the treatment?
The treatment also was a hit and miss as to whether it was there or not. If it was there, it was typically a single word, where. Where,
like
W-E-A-R. For example, if it was myopia,
mm-hmm.
and then the treatment would be where. So where the glasses is what I would assume, or where the contact lens is.
Okay. All right. Is that a sufficient description of treatment?
I would say it's suboptimal. I wouldn't say it's, when it's a refractive prescription, if it's just glasses, wear your glasses, it's not a bad thing to tell a patient.
Mm-hmm.
But usually you'd like it a little bit more robust than a single word.
Okay. All right. And from your review of the records, were there instances where you felt that the treatment wasn't adequate, didn't meet the standard of care?
There were times when there was no supporting, like, for example, there was a treatment given, but there was no supporting data within the record to support why the treatment was given.
Okay.
And there was no narrative to explain the diagnosis for the treatment. Conversely, there were times where there was no treatment noted.
All right. So in some instances, there was a deficiency.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And then under disposition and plan, what were your findings regarding that?
Again, very, very thin in the disposition and plan. When the plan was there, you know, the treatment and plan, I grouped together in many cases because it was the single word where. But it was thin.
All right, and then PA name and dose. What does that relate to?
So if the patient required a pharmaceutical agent, mm-hmm. if it was prescribed, and what was the name of the medication that was prescribed and its dosing. And I do think that the doctor in case here did a fairly nice job. When something was prescribed, the name of the medication, the frequency of medication, and importantly, the stop date was included.
Okay.
And I thought that was, when it was done well.
Right. So under that category, that was successful, that there was compliance with that.
When it was indicated.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. Corrective procedure program. Can you explain what that is?
Typically, in a corrective procedure program, it's something that you're doing ongoing. Like, for example, certain contact lens procedures are ongoing corrective procedures, like in orthokeratology or in binocular vision training, things like that. Sometimes even in ocular disease management, you'll like for glaucoma patients, you will have an ongoing plan. There were really very few of those in here, if any.
All right, so in a lot of the cases here, those were not applicable.
That is correct.
Okay. All right. And then again, we spoke about the signature of Dr. Anderson, and your findings on that were that it was, by and large, complied with.
Correct.
Okay. And then you have additional comments from the reviewer. Can you please, on the first page, it would be patient DD. Can you please explain what your findings were on that?
Well, patient DD was a minus 10 myope, and there was, just according to the records, whether it was done or not, I cannot say, but according to the records, there was no documented dilated retinal examination, and that would certainly be indicated in someone who is that nearsighted.
So that would be something that you would want to see as far as standard of care of an eye examination.
That is correct.
Right. And then turning to the second page of the patient HM, and you have some additional comments from the reviewer on that. What were your findings regarding patient HM?
So this is one of the instances that I discussed earlier where the diagnosis of allergic conjunctivitis was not supported in the exam. So it was just down at the bottom, but allergic conjunctivitis. That was the diagnosis, but the exam itself didn't have any findings that supported that diagnosis.
Okay, so the findings within the examination would need to have been indicated and contained in the medical records to show compliance with the standard of care of an eye exam.
That is correct.
All right. And then turning over to patient TT, you have some comments there regarding patient TT. What
is
are
that? Is that TE?
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. TE.
Yeah. I had a question on whether the exam was even completed because it was so scant, and the patient desired daily toric contact lenses, so there was no notation at all of if the patient was refracted or anything. You know, that essentially, absolutely nothing is contained within the record.
Right. So, and that was based on the information that you were provided from Ms. Wales and she received from Dr. Anderson.
That's correct.
Okay. All right. And then turning to the next page, we have patient KM, and that's an eighth, and that would be, it would be the one, two, three, four, the fifth mm-hmm. column over.
Yeah.
What do you have?
This is a case where the intraocular pressure was found to be elevated. I believe it was around 23, 24, something like that. And there was no comment, no prescription, no treatment, no follow-up, no addressing that abnormal finding. Whether it's, you know, an instrument that typically reads high or whether it's something to follow up on, there was just no comment whatsoever on that.
And then based on your review of that comment, does that fall within the standard of care for an eye examination within optometry?
Yes.
Okay, and that would be something that you would wish to see additional information on that.
That is correct.
All right, and then turning to a patient AS, there's there at the end of the spreadsheet on that page, and there's two comments. Would you speak to those two comments?
Sure. The first one is in the slit lamp examination, 4+ papillae were found. Treatment with Lasticaf was done for 10 days with no follow-up. In my clinical experience, so this is outside my medical reference review, but in my clinical experience, a 4+ papillary reaction is not going to be responsive to Lasticaf in 10 days. It's just an undertreatment. And maybe the patient would have responded. I cannot suppose that. Mm-hmm. But the fact that there was no follow-up on an extreme case of papillary conjunctivitis.
And that follow-up and that documentation is something that you would expect to see in a doctor's record-keeping.
That is correct. Now, on that point, on this one in particular, no follow-up was noted in the record, but what you'll notice is the very next encounter of that same patient was approximately 2-3 weeks later.
Yes.
The patient came back in. Now, whether they were scheduled for a follow-up or not, I don't know. I can only live or die based on what was written in the record.
Right.
But it does appear that the patient came back, and the treatment was then changed to a topical steroid medication, again with no follow-up noted within the record.
Okay. So getting back to the first encounter, under the plan, would that be something that you would wish to see in the plan, follow up with doctor in X amounts of weeks, regarding responsiveness to treatment plan? Is that something that you would wish to see?
You would. Now, you'll notice that this one is marked like the plan actually existed.
Mm-hmm.
That's because there was some sort of plan noted consistent with what was documented within the medical record.
Mm-hmm. All right. But as far as, was there a correlation between the second date of service when there was the treatment follow-up with steroid, no follow-up?
Well, that would be my surmise, that the patient was actually scheduled for follow-up, just not noted, and that they showed up for that, and they did not respond to the initial treatment that was started.
But is that based on just your inferences, based on your
absolutely,
expert?
Absolutely on my inferences. There's no documentation to state that, but the patient did show up.
All right, and as far as nothing in the medical records regarding that, that would fall below the standard of care.
It does for that encounter, yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right, thank you. Right, we have several more to go through. Turning to the next page, that would be patient AS. You have your comment, treatment with Pred Forte, no follow-up. Can you describe that?
Yes, again, this is the same patient, and this is now several months later. This is almost 6 months later. Comes in with a similar problem, again, treated with a topical steroid drop with no follow-up noted. Patient does show up 4 months later, same problem, treated with another topical medication, Paseo, again, with no follow-up. Interesting on this particular patient is that the diagnosis on this very last encounter dated 8/15/15,
mm-hmm.
there was a GPC diagnosis, giant papillary conjunctivitis diagnosis, but there was no contact lens information there, nor any history of vernal conjunctivitis problems in the patient's health history.
Okay, and what concerns do you have about that?
Again, there's no supporting documentation as to if it's GPC related to contact lens wear,
mm-hmm.
which, again, you would surmise, given that it's an eye doctor's
mm-hmm.
exam, But it could also be, like, say, a vernal conjunctivitis that the patient suffered. But there's no documentation to support where the GPC diagnosis comes from. Like, what's the etiology
of it? Okay. And is that something that you would, that is a requirement of an eye examination in accordance with the standard of care in Arizona?
Yes, it is.
Okay. All right. And then turning to patient, the next line, patient AG, comments of a reviewer. Can you please turn your attention to that and explain what your findings were in that patient?
Well, again, it was just a treatment with a topical medication once a day as needed. This medication is particularly safe, and that's a very reasonable thing to do mm-hmm. with this medication. But again, the examination itself didn't support the treatment or the and there was no documentation.
So again, it was not consistent with the eye examination standard of care.
Correct.
Okay. All right. And then again, we have turning to patient AM, and that has a statement by a comments of reviewer. Says the one word where, and this is what you testified about earlier.
Yeah, it had just gotten to that point when I'd gone through, I don't know, what is that, 9, 18, 27, 35 records by this point. That was just one of those where I said, okay, this needs to be commented on because this is the management style. It's just a style record recording.
All right. Okay. Turning to patient AM, that would be the next encounter. We have a moderate, high, myope, never dilated. What are your concerns regarding that?
Just standard of care for a very nearsighted individual. Again, these patients may be co-managed with other doctors, and that may be reasonable for them not to be dilated in this instance or in the instances that they were seen by our doctor here, but there's no notation that they're being cared for elsewhere. So based on what we're living and dying by in the records, this is below the standard of care.
Okay. Now, as far as co-care, are you talking about possibly a retinal specialist would be seeing these individuals with
very possibly, yes. Either a retinal specialist. So oftentimes general ophthalmology will also see those patients annually for dilation.
Okay. So there could be a, like, parallel treatment
and
coordination of care.
And it is very common in this valley for patients to have more than one eye care specialist that they see.
But in this case, Dr. Anderson doesn't note that in his record, does he?
There's no way for us to know that.
Okay.
That's correct.
All right. And then turning to GF, you have similar comments with those same comments apply?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Thank you. All right. And then turning to patient DP, it's a 78-year-old, no DFE, no decrease in BVA. Is that what you were speaking to before when we talked about the BVA?
Well, what I was wondering was, as the patient wasn't dilated, there was no way to determine specifically if the cataract that had been noted in the record was the reason for the decrease in vision. Whenever you have a visual acuity that's less than 20/20, your impression and disposition should include a rationale for the change in visual acuity, whether they were born that way or if there's some pathologic process that needs to be followed or noted. So there's no, because there's no dilated retinal exam, the view to the fundus is compromised without dilation. So the question is why is the visual acuity down?
Okay. And that incomplete piece would be something that would be necessary in an eye examination that met the standard of care.
Or a referral.
Okay, and was there a referral noted?
No, there was no referral noted on this type case.
Okay, all right, thank you. Turning to the next page, we have patient ST, and under the comments by reviewer was patient request, DFE, VF, no evidence performed. What are your comments about that?
Yeah, so on the bottom left-hand column of the electronic medical records as they appeared as I got them, there's this little section where does the patient request further examination, and the options were dilation, photos, and visual field testing. Mm-hmm. So if the patient responded in the affirmative, mm-hmm. there was no notation within the record that those things were done, and no interpretation if they were done.
Okay.
So that's what that comment refers to.
And again, that would not meet the standard of care.
No, ma'am, it would not.
Okay. All right, and then turning to patient ST, we have CASIO with no FU CAC.
Yeah.
Can you explain that?
So CASIO is, again, very safe. Well, it's a safe allergy medication. They have chronic allergic conjunctivitis. They're replaced on CASIO with no follow-up recommended.
And again, would that be something that you would see in an eye examination that met the standard of care?
You'd always want to follow up on your treatment to see if it was effective or not, yes.
Okay, and you have no other records that indicated that that was done?
That is correct.
Okay, all right. Now, turning to patient, I believe it's AC, it said lost to FU appointment D 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that state?
Well, so this is a catch-22. This one is where the patient was actually told to come back in a week, and they did not.
Okay.
So they were followed up. And again, this is one where the patient was requested a contact lens prescription as their chief complaint.
Okay.